presenting radio's foremost laboratory of new writing and production techniques, the Columbia Workshop.
This is a thing I've wanted to do for quite a while. There are some people, some countries I'd like to remember.
The Columbia Workshop presents Thanks for the Memories, written by a young lieutenant of the cavalry, Ruth Ford Scotterman.
Before I proceed to forget the past few years, there are some things I'd like to remember. Some people, some countries. Friends a fellow meets in his travels overseas. I happened to be in a part of the war that started from England and was fought in France, and I hung around those countries off and on for 3 long years. You know, America is quite a place, only it's good to get outside it once in a while and look around. The conclusions you come to are not stupendous, but they certainly are encouraging. You see, the way I figure it, I owe them each a letter. England and France. It's the courteous thing for a guest to do after he's gone back home. Dear England, this is my bread and butter notebook to thank you for the weekend, Friday, 1942, till Monday, 1944. You were a gracious host. You had a tough job, all things considered, entertaining several million guests like me in a place not quite the size of Texas, and guests with some funny notions, visitors from warm, rich, safe America, who sometimes expected perhaps a bit too much, especially at the beginning.
There it is, you guys. Take a squint through the porthole.
So that's merry old England, huh?
The country gardens my eye. Nothing but fog and barrage balloons. Did you ever see such a dump?
It sort of shook the boys at first. The beautiful gardens were planted with vegetables. And the funny old buildings, a lot of them, are nothing but broken stones. It shook us to see that this was a place where war had struck and was waiting to strike again. But we got used to the idea, and you got used to us. And I must admit, our American exuberance takes a lot of getting used to.
Have you met any of them Yanks yet, Lily?
Have I met any of them Yanks yet? Not off, I ain't. The other day I'm sitting in my block with a bucket of beer for me old man, minding my own business and having a look at the London Chronicle, when up comes a Yank, and before you can say Mr. Churchill suspended us, he kisses me right in public. Great bill, man, bill, walks me around the bench and walks off with him, and God save the king. And you ask me if I'm merely a Yank.
Yes, we had a few misunderstandings, but none of them was serious. You know how it is with strangers getting to know each other better. At first, there's an undercurrent to be reckoned with an aura of false impressions, an atmosphere of doubt. But given a little time, it goes away, and you find your friendships all the stronger. And so it was with us. I remember my own battalion just off the boat, just straight from Liverpool by convoy. As quietly at night, it took possession with its trucks and men of Folly Manor, Barringdon Box. Folly Manor, with its Georgian parks and mansion, high and proud on a hill, and the tiny market town of Barrington huddled instinctively below. Dark that first night was. No moon. We were all restricted to quarters in the usual army tradition, but there were two of us who couldn't wait. We had to see the town that night.
Hey, Bill, where are you?
Right here. Boy, it's blacker than the first sergeant's heart.
You said it.
And we haven't found a pub yet. I hope the captain doesn't send a patrol through the village tonight.
How could they find us? So dark, they'd be lucky if you could find the village.
But suppose they...
I
beg your pardon.
That's all right, my lad. Can't blame you in a black hook like this.
Excuse me, but can you tell us where to find a pub in this town?
Yeah, we've been walking around like a couple of zombies for the past 20 minutes, and we haven't had a drink yet. Come on, what's the score, Pop? How do you find one of these joints?
Why, it's very simple, lads. All you have to have is a fine nose for the smell of beer, or a sharp ear for the clink of glasses.
And which do you have?
Well, as it happens, you're talking to the only man in Barrington who's blessed with a bit of both. So come on, lad. Hang on to my coattails and off we go. Well, here we are, lads. Hey. Evening, Tim.
Evening, Mr. Bailey.
All alone tonight?
Yes. The missus is off to her land, she's...
Well, I see you brought the American Army with you. Welcome to Barrington, boys. What do you have?
Got any scotch?
We're all out of that. We'll be till Tuesday next. How about a couple of pints of mild and bitter?
Mild and bitter? What's that?
Why, it's...
We'll take it. What's the difference so long as it's liquid?
Right you are, my lad. Make mine the same, Tim.
I don't.
Now, I know you boys haven't had a chance to change your money yet, so this is on the house.
Oh, well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks.
And I'll join you myself. Cheers.
Aye, cheers.
Money, right?
Bit of all right, eh?
Now, who could that be? Nobody in Barrington would knock on the door of a public house.
Uh-oh.
I got a funny feeling that's for us. Where can we hide? Quick.
Hey, what's the matter? We're not supposed to be out. That's probably a patrol.
Get in this coat closet. Here. Hurry.
Come in. Come in.
Good evening.
Evening.
I'm Captain Decker of the American Army.
Oh. Evening, Captain.
Evening. We just moved in at Farley Manor. I'm checking to see whether any of my men have been around here.
Aye. Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't seen one. Have you, Tim?
Mm-mm. Not a one.
They're not supposed to be out, you know. They're all restricted.
Is that so?
Yes, the town's off limits for 2 days. We always do that as a precaution.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's none been here.
Good. Say, you don't happen to have any scotch, do you?
Why, that's funny.
What's that?
Well, what's what?
I thought I heard an American voice just there.
That was probably me practicing my imitations. I'm rather good at them. Now, here's one of those questions.
It seemed to come from that closet. You mind if I have a look?
Yeah.
That's strange. I must have been mistaken.
Did you say you had any scotch?
Sorry, sir. We're all out at present.
Oh. Well, good night, then.
Good night, sir.
Night, neighbor.
Hey, that was a... Now, how did they... It's all right. You can come out now. Are you boys still in there?
Yeah, but you'll have to help us down.
Well, where are you?
Turning up behind the coat. And I think the hooks are going to break any minute.
Weeks went by and the town began to seem like home. The crooked, cobbled streets rang with a cheerful echo in the early hours of morning as we passed along them in column of twos. And in the evening, the echo was charged with hoots and hollers, snatches of song and laughter. The face of the town was friendly and bright. One day at Reveille, a letter was read.
To the officers and men of the 1st Battalion, 112th Infantry, you are cordially invited to attend a dance at Barrington Schoolhouse this Friday night at 8 p.m. The arrangements will be made by the service committee, and we hope to be able to have these Friday night dances as a regular thing from now on. You will always be more than welcome. Yours sincerely, Mary Dean, Committee Chairman.
Mary Dean, the bookseller's daughter. Gracious and fair as an Easter sun. The truth came out, as it always does. She was the committee. Musicians, door prizes, refreshments. She got them all with a tireless energy. And Friday evening always found her there, smiling and dancing with everyone, making us all forget for a couple of pleasant hours the drag of the dog-faced day behind and the monotonous march of tomorrow. There were others, too. The pattern of humanity, when looked at in the light, is warm with color. The simple tokens shine in the cloth. And I remembered.
The road to Oxford? Well, there used to be a signpost, but what with the invasion scare, they've taken them all down. A fork's about a mile up from here. Then there's another turning after that. It's kind of hard to find when you don't know the way. I'll tell you what, if you'll wait while I fetch my cap and pipe, I'll walk you down and set you on the road.
Just ordinary things, perhaps. Gestures to be taken almost for granted. And certainly not to serve as topics for discussion in the barrack room bull sessions of the 1st Battalion. The Christmas season came, and long-faced GIs stored under their bunks the packages from America, chopped a baby evergreen and trimmed it in the hut with bits of cotton waste, trying grimly not to think too much of home. But the long arm of English hospitality reached out even unto the Nissen hut.
Hey, you guys. The sergeant wants a 50-man detail. Yeah. For Christmas dinner. Anybody want to go?
The invitations fell like welcome rain on the desert. It even happened to me, the young dentist and his wife. I scarcely knew them.
Come for Christmas dinner, won't you?
Yes, please do. And bring a large appetite.
Those, then, were the people of Barrington, caught in the act of making certain taken-for-granted gestures of goodwill. Caught in the midst of their own tribulations, their bombings, their shortages, their fears, their sons with Monty in Egypt, some of them, and others with God at Dunkirk. Those were the people of Barrington Box, making no noisy banners of their distress and finding still a smile for strangers. But the testimony of a friend of mine can tell it better.
My name's John Washko, private first class. I was on guard that night. A little after midnight, and I just come on. Mine was post number 2, a road leading up the camp beside a church. It was raining like cats and dogs. My figure had a hole in it. The water ran off my helmet down my neck. I went around the corner of the church and stood in a doorway to the back to dry off a little. My eyes got used to the darkness. I could see somebody in the churchyard, kneeling by a marble tablet in the rain. She's a girl. I could hear her crying. After a while, she got up. When she left, she had to pass close to the doorway. I could see her face. It was Mary Dean, the girl who runs the dances. I couldn't understand it, because at the schoolhouse, she was always smiling.
Concerning your country's side, there's another debt I owe. For services rendered anonymously, on numerous maneuvers, convoys, and marches, down your winding little roads in the sun and the rain, past the autumn berries and your willows and your streams. Thank you, England, for your helpful earth, your good cooperative ground. It made a bed as soft as many, without benefit of mattresses. It was also thoughtful of you to supply those stars for lonely nights on bivouac. Yes, there's no disputing it. By and large, we got along together very well. In the end, perhaps, it will be seen that this made all the difference. A spirit of something, intangible, of course, prevailing in little places of no importance, at moments unattended by ministers of foreign affairs. Discovered in a Devonshire cottage, found on a farm in Kent, suspected in a chip shop in Salisbury, and certainly seen at a church service in Staines. A beautiful spirit, wearing a kind of humility, when last heard from proceeding east, south, north, and west, on highways of all descriptions, and believed to be invincible. Then, one cloudy day, we slipped from the shipways of the English coast, simply, with no fanfare, easing off in the darkness quietly, using the prerogative of haste to skip goodbyes. It was a churning of the channel waters, the likes of which the fish had never seen. It was a tense procession, too, that moved in mass precision through the morning dusk, ready for a hot reception. Dear France, my visit to you was made in some haste. In fact, I arrived in rather a flurry with a certain amount of noise. For a while, I didn't have time to stop and look around, but I knew we were going to be friends. You made a charming hostess from the start. The welcome mat was on your doorstep. What was left of it? Although, of course, the neighbors' brats were trying their best to keep us away. Your bright good morning was inherent in the dawn on a beach called Omaha, and quite distinguishable even when bracketed by 88s. The soft breeze of your blessing was caught in Carentan. Your warm hello was also heard by two worn-out GIs in an apple orchard near St. Lo.
I'll give that honey sniper something to think about.
Oh, what time is it, Bill?
7 p.m. 1900 hours, as the sergeant says.
I wish they'd send somebody to relieve us. Don't they realize we've been on this outpost since 6 o'clock last night?
Hey.
Yeah?
Somebody moving now, don't you?
Where?
Right behind those trees. There. Hey, it's little Albert.
Who?
That French kid who was hanging around the platoon CP, remember? I wonder what he's doing out here.
He's waving something. Looks like a bottle.
Oh, my gosh. Yesterday, I asked him if he could get us some wine.
Look, he's starting to cross the field.
Hey, Albert! Albert, get back! Get down, Bill! Uh-oh. Close, but no cigar.
Well, that Heine will take a crack at anything that moves.
Here, give me a hand with this brownie.
Well, what are you going to do?
I'm going to give that kid some covering fire. We got to protect our bottle of wine.
Bonjour, Bill. Voici la bouteille de vin que vous avez
demandé
hier.
Put him down real quick. Descendez, Albert. Oh, crazy kid, you might. Well, anyhow, thanks for the bottle. Merci.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, now that you're here, I must say I could do with a drink. This is the first bottle of wine I've ever...
Bill, did he get you?
No, that lousy son of a sniper. He got the bottle. I'll fix his wagon.
Welcome is welcome a mile away. Eager on the face of a fragile kid, skinny on the barren, war-poor plots of Normandy, or lush in the lap of the rich, ripe lands beyond, but a good, glad welcome nevertheless. After the days of the Branche, it was there, and the breakthrough into Brittany, as we chased the Nazis over the breadth of your provinces, rolling the spearhead through town after town.
Yeah, that's pretty nice, huh? Every time we take a town, the inhabitants come running out and give us Sam Penn and Cognac, huh? Hey, Mac.
Yeah.
Let's just say one more town and call it a day.
And I remember you, France, for your open heart, and the smiles of your honest people, the kisses thrown at convoys, the shaking of many hands. The children in the dooryard clutching the broad dress of their mother and watching the Shermans rumble by. To them, freedom was a piece of chocolate tossed from the moving turrets by young gods and held in the mouth until it melted. To them, liberation was an unaccountable gladness of their parents. They were impressed, but did not understand. Their confusion could be pardoned. They were so young. The occupation so much older. But the old men knew. The old men were in the streets looking for the feel of victory, and in return, thrusting up two fingers in a trembling V. Their variations on the central theme of friendship sometimes took an unexpected turn.
One time, our battalion was camped in the woods near Fontainebleau. While getting out of the truck, I ripped my trousers on the backboard. They were woolen ODs, and the only ones I had left. So I went into the town and found a tailor in a little shop. An old man. I asked him to do the mending while I waited. His fingers shook a little, but he handled the needle deftly and the work was well done. At the end, I offered to pay him.
No, no, please not. This is a little thing. I would like to do it for rien.
But I said, you're a tailor. It's your business. Why do you refuse the money?
It is like this. I do it out of happiness.
Happiness?
Yes. You see, happiness is a different thing with different men. With generals, it is winning a battle. With artists, it is the painting of a masterpiece. The general cannot endure to lose a battle. The artist cannot endure to paint a bad picture. With me, it is simply that I cannot endure to see a hole in the seat of the pantalon. C'est tout.
With him, it was simply he could not endure to see a hole in the seat of liberty. Give them full credit, France. There's strength in your old. Let the new men breed such strength again. There's a hard, fierce brand of country love, deceptive in its seeming serenity. The old man who sits on a bench at Saint Mary Glees and mumbles into the beard of his neighbor, they say Paris is free. He says nothing with his gums, but behind the eyes there is much. And they fight too, these old men. They fought beside the young. It was not hard to find a hint of heroism here and there, proof that a patriot at 70 is still effective. There were the wrinkled old professors instilling in their students by defiant candlelight the principles of the decadent democracies. There was the old mechanic of Montreux, whose feeble hands in the secret of his cellar repaired clandestine radios. There were as well accountings in the annals of the liberating armies. One, for example, dated August 1944, when late at night certain elements of our 1st Battalion proceeded east in convoy from Le Mans.
Captain, doesn't it seem to you that we're taking a long time to reach Chateau Dun? I think we'd better stop and have another look at the map.
Right, Major. Pull over to the side, driver, and signal the rest of the convoy to halt.
Yes, sir.
Then find Lieutenant Scott and Lieutenant Timmons and tell them to report to me here.
Turn your flight light on the map, will you, Captain?
Yes, sir.
Come on, get over the side of the road.
Now, our instructions were to cross the first bridge on the right at the outskirts of the city.
But we haven't passed the bridge yet, sir.
And we haven't passed the city. I can't understand.
Lieutenant Scott reporting, sir.
Where's Timmons, Scott?
Yes, sir.
All right now, gentlemen, gather around here and I'll explain this briefly. We may be lost, and then again, it's possible we may be on the right road and simply haven't reached our destination. But we're needed at Chateau Dun in a hurry, and we haven't got time to fool around. We'll either have to go on or turn back and retrace our steps. We can't do one and then the other. Now, it's difficult to get oriented in this infernal blackness, but we're going to have a try. Lieutenant Scott?
Sir?
I want you to set up temporary security around the convoy.
Yes, sir.
Lieutenant Timmons?
Yes, sir.
Send a scout out 300 yards to the right flank of the road and ask him to see if he can find a river. Then send a point team 2 miles up the road to look for a bridge in the outskirts of a town. Tell them to report by walkie-talkie. You got that?
Yes, sir.
Okay, get going.
Men have reported, sir.
Well, what did they find?
There is a river off to the right, about 200 yards behind the trees. And the point Bannum said the outskirts of the city are about 1.75 miles up the road. They're at the bridge now.
Good. Tell them to wait there for us. Mount up.
Yes, sir.
Mount up!
So we're on the right road after all.
Yeah, it looks that way. I still don't get it.
Turn them over.
Hey, hold it
up, lad.
Hold it,
sir.
Hold it, sir.
What is it?
I don't know, sir. Somebody yelling to wait.
What's the trouble?
I don't know, Major. Somebody's lining up now.
Who
are you?
Very good, Ivan Commandant. I live on the hill 4 miles back. I see your motor passing, and then I see them make to stop here on the road. I run here to warn you. There is danger ahead in the city. Everywhere there are the mine. It is a trap.
You ran 4 miles to tell us that? But Chateau Dun is in American hands. The engineers have cleared the mine.
But this is not Chateau Dun, mon commandant. This way lies the enemy. Like their agents turn the roadside.
Yes, the river and the city.
The river is the Loire. The city, Orléans. The German artillery is registered on every foot of it. Also on the bridge.
Thank you.
There are those who will say that the running of 4 miles at night does not constitute an act of heroism, being merely a question of lung capacity and such. Well, Henri Gaudier was a man of 70. He found the strength to run 4 miles from other things than his legs and lungs and heart. You can thank God for the rough stock of your people, France, the proud patriarchs of the peasant towns. Give them my greetings, and tell them I have not forgotten. A hearty handshake also to the division of Leclerc, and the men of Castigny, the Free French, the Maquis, the FFI. They helped us when we needed help the most. Say hello to Paris for me, a city exceedingly fair, to the Arch of Triumph sending its strong stone mass up through the streaking sunset, and to the people of Paris, in so many ways so like Americans themselves, light-hearted and glad with life. Remember me to the evenings, full of bright high moons. Are they still as beautiful? I often think of them. And I think of the happy crowds, hoarse with shouting hurrah, dancing in the streets so long deserted. Yes, Paris sang a lilting song that young September when we came. To those who knew her pain, her pools of tears, it was miraculous that she could smile, even a little. Believe me, the music of her laughter was a triumph. Dear England and dear France, in closing, I would like to say that not too many peacetime years from now, I hope to visit you both again, wearing a suit of my own choosing and a tourist's tie. I look for the chance to renew old friendships, and I know that I'll find you happy and in good health. In the meantime, give my best regards and humble gratitude to Kenneth Kerr, the dentist up in Berkshire, who gave me Christmas dinner and made his home my own, to Tim, the publican, who bought me a beer on the house, to Duncan Reed, the farmer, who walked me to the Oxford Road, to young Albert of Normandy, who tried so hard to bring us a bottle of wine, to an unknown tailor in Fontainebleau, who patched my pants for free, to Henri Gaudier, who saved the 1st Battalion, to all of you and many others, in a list too long to mention, my deep appreciation. To the girl who knelt in darkness in a rain-washed country churchyard, my sympathy, my sorrow. To the men of both your nations who fought as well beside us as they fought at first alone, my friendship and my praise. To the hills of your homelands and your free blue skies, to the Thames, to the Seine, to your old and young, to the contributions of your little people toward the dignity of man. To England and to France, thanks for the memories.
You have just heard the Columbia Workshops presentation of Thanks for the Memories by Bruce Ford Scotterman. Music was composed and conducted by Charles Paul, and the narrator was Warren Bryan. Thanks for the Memories was produced and directed by Guy Della Chapa. Next week, the Columbia Workshop will present Four Quartets, a program composed of poems by T.S. Eliot. Participating in the broadcast will be Mr. James Johnson Sweeney, director of the Department of Painting and Sculpture at the Museum of Modern Art in New York, and the American poet and editor, James Hall Wheeler. Robert Louis Cheyon will produce Four Quartets for the Columbia Workshop. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.